This is State of the Union, the District Council 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE-FM. I'm Chris Policano. DC 37 has nearly 150,000 members and over 50,000 retirees. We're part of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, also known as AFSCME. We're on the air Sundays at 8 p.m. We rebroadcast on Wednesdays at 1:30 p.m. We're also available as a podcast. You simply go to the podcast app on your smartphone or tablet and search for DC 37 State of the Union. And there are now more ways than ever to stay in touch with the union. You can check out our website, www.dc37.net. Please follow us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you have any comments about our show or would like us to help you promote a community event, just drop us a line at stateoftheunion@dc37.net. Let us know the facts about the event, and we will talk about it on this show. In fact, we've got a couple of let me begin the show by going over a couple of announcements. The Municipal Employees Housing Program holds a housing seminar on Wednesday, January 29th at 5:30 p.m. For the location and other information, please call 212-815-1814. That's 212-815-1814. DC 37's month-long celebration of Black History begins with a ribbon-cutting ceremony on Thursday, February 6th. For location, time, and details, call 212-815-1000 or visit the website, www.dc37.net. Members, you can always check out the DC 37 Rewards Program, whether you purchase tickets to ball games or get an amazing price for a hotel room. Look to do it through the Rewards Program and achieve real savings. To register, visit www.dc37rewards.com. Last year, at the end of last year, we elected new leadership to DC 37. DC 37 Secretary John Hislop was on the show for a conversation about his new role. And tonight we are joined in the studio by recently elected DC 37 Executive Vice President. He is the president of Local 1503. His name is Raul Campbell. Welcome to State of the Union, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm fine. Was it a big, pleasant surprise for you to be the new DC 37 Executive Vice President? That puts you on the executive board of DC 37.
That is correct. You know, it was a pleasant surprise.
And how long have you been, let's start with the basics. Mm-hmm. How long have you been president of Local 1503? And what does Local 1503 represent in terms of titles and where an employer? Go ahead.
Well, I've been president for about 4 years.
Oh.
And in the Metropolitan Museum of Art, we have a mixed unit. So basically, I'm representing not only maintainers in various titles, but I'm also representing technicians and the security guards.
How many people in all are we talking about?
A little over 800.
A little over 800. And when you say maintainers, you're talking about people who maintain the exhibits at the museum?
Correct. Besides the exhibits, we also have independent shops. We have the plumbing shop, which I'm a plumber.
Okay.
And we have electricians. We have carpenters. And we have plexi guys.
Plexi guys. What's
yes.
a plexi guy? Dealing with plexiglass?
Plexiglass that covers the art.
Oh, yeah.
Correct. We have painters and we also have riggers. They're the gentlemen and ladies that move the art.
And so you actually, the Metropolitan Museum is a private employer. They are not part of the city of New York, right? So you're one of
Correct.
The private sector workers, locals that are part of DC 37.
Correct.
And it's fascinating to me, all these different titles that it takes to keep the Metropolitan Museum of Art going. How long have you been there?
I'm going on 21 years.
Wow.
Yes.
Have you seen many changes at the museum?
Oh, absolutely.
Talk about them.
But, well, besides the construction and the various exhibits that come in and out, the museum is growing. That means the membership is growing. And because it's multifaceted, and there's so many dimensions to it,
right.
It really takes a lot. When looking in the contract and dealing with various backgrounds and individuals, it's looking at every single job title, and make sure that everything is held together within the collective bargaining agreement.
And in terms of your activity with the union, with your local and with DC 37, you say you've been working at the museum for about 20 years, 20 plus years?
Yeah, I'm going on 21, yeah.
Did you become an active member of your local right away, or how did you get to the union?
Well, when I first got hired, I had a lot of things to say. I had a lot of things to say. I'll tell you, it's really funny. I ran into the vice president at that time. His name was Reggie Morrell, senior. And he pulled me aside one day. He said, hey, kid, you know.
And you were a kid at the time.
Yeah, at the time. Oh, correct. I was 29 years old.
Okay.
He was like, you got a lot to say. You know, here, hold this contract, and you should seriously think about getting into the union.
Okay.
Get into union. So after about a year, you know, I thought about it. I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to run for Shop Steward. So I ran for Shop Steward, and I won.
You are a native of Guyana?
Yes. I was born in Guyana.
Do you come from a union family? Is there much union activity in your roots?
Nope.
Okay.
The one thing which I did appreciate is the structure.
Of?
Within my immediate family.
Okay.
Like, my grandparents were very strict, but they were fair.
Okay.
It's all about the work, getting things done, and being responsible.
And you say that's, how does that affect, how did that affect you as you grew up and as you became part of the union?
Well, that was always instilled in me. So as I approached the avenue of getting into the union, I just carried what I've learned and what I was taught into what I do right now. And it started with being a shop steward, and I just progressed from then on.
And what are the challenges of, what are the challenges of being a shop steward in terms of how do you do that well?
The major challenge, to be honest, is learning to be honest with the membership that I'm representing. Because from time to time, when the members do get in trouble, depending on who it is and what they did, they're not completely honest. So it was challenging for me just to get down to the truth. Because once you get the actual truth from the members, then you're able to represent them better.
And do you find that there are some members who don't understand what the shop steward can do for them or do not take advantage of communication with shop stewards? And how do you try to address that?
Well, at the time when I was shop steward, I always make sure to let them know is that the stewards are here to help. We cannot help unless you're truthfully honest. And basically, what we learn and what we have that keeps us strong is maintaining and preserving our rights within the CBA, within the contract. So it's while I'm learning, I'm teaching them, and in turn, I'm hoping that they would just spread the word. And, you know, it started out that way.
And do you get the sense that members care about reading the contract and looking at the contract, or is that a challenge for you to get them to understand what their rights are?
For the most,
and what the limitations are.
Yeah. For the most part, when they do come into the museum, the first thing they do ask for is the contract, because everyone wants to know what their rights are, what benefits they do have, and what they need to do themselves to better themselves as union individuals and to see what's available so they themselves could progress. It is challenging at times, but to be honest, the individuals that stuck around, they see the value of being within the union and also reading the contract thoroughly.
We're talking with Raul Campbell. He is the president of Local 1503, employees at the Metropolitan Museum. He is also one of the newest executive board members of DC 37. In terms of union activism and union participation in politics and in world events, and that's pretty big world events, but we really are trying constantly to talk about the role of working people and improving working people's lives. How important do you think that is now, more than ever in the current climate in which we live?
Extremely important. Extremely important. What I had to do for myself was basically reassess. I cannot encourage someone to do something if I myself am not doing it. So it was like an internal thing for me. And I found that just being visible, being vocal, highlighting certain things within, you know, what's happening around the world or within our contract and what's happening down at the council, just being repetitive, letting the members know, listen, this is what needs to get done. We have to be out there. You have to show everyone that we are alive.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In terms of the challenges facing the executive board and the union in the new year, you have any thoughts about what, you know, your understanding of what we have to do to stay strong?
Partially, yes. Because there are quite a few things that I know our executive director, Henry Garrido, is focusing on. I trust in his vision. But for me right now, seeing how I just got there, I'm like, SpongeBob SquarePants without the square pants. I'm sucking everything up. And what I find for myself, I listen more because I learn more that way. And then eventually, you will hear my voice.
And in terms of the year ahead, and in terms of the, there's going to be an election next year for president and all those other things. Do you get involved in the political activity? Do you get in terms of elections and things outside? Are you someone who believes in being active that way?
Yes, I do. But the thing is, just like with everything else, it's a process. It's a process for me. It's important. And like I say, right now, I'm just learning the nuances because I know this is one area I need to be more active in. So I will defer to my senior colleagues, but at the same time, you know, my eyes and ears are open. I know what I like and what I want. And the basic thing is, whoever's pro-union, that's what I think the focus should be. We should always support anyone that's pro-union.
And have you found, I mean, I don't want to answer the question for you, but have you found that folks are have been welcoming and have been appreciative of your presence on the executive board? Have you found certain local, other local presidents who have reached out to you and said, can you help? How important is that to you in doing your own job, to have the support of other folks?
Oh, man, I think it's fantastic. I mean, everyone was very welcoming. A lot of handshakes, a lot of smiles. Congratulations, brother. You know, it's just a greeting. You know, it makes you feel, you know, warm and toasty inside. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of work ahead. What made me feel confident is that because of the greeting I received, I know for a fact that I could turn to any one of them with a legitimate question for answers, and they would readily assist.
Is there something I should have asked you that you wish you had the opportunity to say as we wrap up this interview? Because I've learned that I should not be thinking I know all the questions.
So. What is the question again?
The question is, what is the question? So I think that's pretty... Welcome to the executive board, and we look forward to talking to you again as the year goes on.
Oh, thank you very much, Chris. Absolutely.
All right. I'm going to do another announcement, and then we're going to take a break. And the announcement that I'm going to ask folks is to, if you want advice on attending college, please make an appointment with a CUNY counselor or a DC 37 counselor by calling 212-815-1700. And we're going to go to a break right now.
Were you a September 11th responder or volunteer? Were you present at the dust cloud on 9/11? Do you live, work, or go to school in the New York City disaster area on 9/11 or in the following months? Do you now suffer from problems such as chronic cough, shortness of breath, anxiety, depression, or have other symptoms? If so, you may be eligible for the World Trade Center Health Program and could receive medical monitoring and treatment at no out-of-pocket cost to you. To learn more about the program and get an application, go to www.cdc.gov/WTC or call 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care. Call today. 1-888-982-4748. 1-888-982-4748. If you were there, you deserve care.
We're back. This is State of the Union, the DC 37 radio show on 91.5 WNYE FM. We're also available as a podcast. We've been doing this for about 5 years now on a fairly regular basis. And in that time, in the last year, there have been a number of new voices on the air that you can listen to. Our sisters and brothers at the New York State AFL-CIO have now produced an interesting podcast called Union Strong. It can be heard anywhere you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify. They have listeners in 48 states and over 35 countries. Tonight we have their edition on the Television Diversity Tax Credit Bill, which is now law. We thought it was important to let our listeners know that there are other voices out there. Take a listen to the New York State AFL-CIO Darcy Wells on their union strong.
For the New York State AFL-CIO, I'm Darcy Wells, and this is Union Strong. Welcome to a new year of Union Strong podcast. And right out of the gate, we're celebrating a victory for working people who write and direct in the television industry in the state of New York. Governor Cuomo has signed into law the Television Diversity Tax Credit Bill. And joining us on the phone from New York City to talk about this new law and what it means to the television industry is Lowell Peterson, the executive director of the Writers Guild of America East. Lowell, thank you for joining us on the Union Strong podcast and congratulations on getting this bill signed into law.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to participate. And I want to throw the shout out right back at you. The Mario and the entire New York State AFL-CIO were deeply supportive of this legislation for years, together with the Writers Guild and the Directors Guild. So it's definitely a movement victory.
And I want to talk about what this bill is about. Well, when you say that, I mean it was a few years working on this. It took a while to get it over the finish line, but you had quite an active campaign out there to get this across, right?
We certainly did. And, you know, we had great lobbyists, and we thank them as well, Richard Winston and Larry Shearer, and a lot of staff people involved, and our sponsors, Senator Jackson and Assemblymember Crespo, of course, get the greatest kudos. But the fact is that member engagement and member involvement in making phone calls and doing emails and signing petitions and riding the train to Albany and meeting with legislators, that really made the difference.
Alana Glazer here calling to urge you to sign the Television Diversity Bill. It is a landmark bill.
Hi, I just wanted to post my support for the New York TV Diversity Tax Credit Bill. If you haven't heard about
it. We had an inside game. We knew who to talk to, but having members themselves participate is really what made the difference. I think when a member says something to a legislator or to the governor's office, when a member takes the time to pick up the phone and call the governor, that means a lot. So I think a lot of our strategy has been making sure the members were front and center.
Well, we saw that in this case for sure. So it's called the Television Diversity Tax Credit. Why was this law needed? What was going on in the industry or wasn't going on that led to efforts to get this bill passed?
Well, you know, the industry has had a diversity problem for a lot of years. The fact is, most of the population is not represented in the employment rosters. There are many more women and people of color who are available to write stories or direct shows than are actually hired. And there's been hand-wringing about this for years. There have been high-level blue ribbon panels. There have been internships, which are great, by the way. We have our own training programs. But what wasn't happening was an actual change in employment. And we came to the conclusion that the way to fix it was to put money at the point of hire. If a producer has an incentive to do equity and inclusion, to hire people who are historically excluded from the industry, then we have a program that will work. So, I mean, we had a tremendously non-diverse industry. The audiences are very diverse. Mm-hmm. The storytelling wasn't reflecting the actual experiences of audiences, but, you know, there was just inertia in the industry. That's not only in the entertainment industry, but certainly in the entertainment industry. The hiring patterns didn't change. You hire who you know, and the people who you know are people who are just like you, so it perpetuates itself. When we needed a little jolt of voltage, and this tax credit was what we came up with. It sits within the broader production tax credit that has been enormously successful. Mm-hmm. It has brought tens of thousands of good union jobs to the state of New York. And we thought, that's a great model. Let's use it for diversity. And so we did.
So can you explain the specifics of the new law? How is it going to be a little more inclusive?
Americans, Jessica Jones, Power, and the NIC originate straight out of Brooklyn. And a bill now making its way through the state legislature may impact how many more series join them and how diverse they'll be behind the camera. Now, the bill deals with amending the popular Made in New York tax credit.
Well, so if you hire a woman or a person of color to write or direct television in New York, you can apply 30% of their salary or you can apply their salary and get a 30% tax credit. This is the way the overall production tax credit works. 30% of eligible costs are reimbursed in the form of tax credits. It is an enormously successful program. It has attracted so much work to New York, so many jobs, and we know it will work the same way in writers' rooms and for directors. So there is actually money that it will be applied. It's basically a cut in your tax bill if you're a producer, if you actually do the right thing and hire women and people of color.
So is New York leading the way by adding this law? Because I thought I saw something in the news recently about Georgia. Are they trying to do something similar?
There have been discussions in other states, Georgia, I think, California, yes. Nothing enacted. New Jersey has an interesting sort of overlay that New Jersey has a similar production tax credit where 30% tax credits are applied for eligible costs. And on top of that, if you have a diversity plan in New Jersey, you get another 2%. New York is the first one that's this specific and this carefully aimed at storytelling. The idea is, and this is where New York is leading the nation, if you diversify the storytelling, you not only make better TV because you get reflect a lot more people's experiences and life stories, but you also diversify the entire industry because it all starts with the stories. People who are writing this year and next year become producers the year after that, and they become executives the year after that, and people who direct will create their own shows. And so it will have a long-term effect on equity and inclusion throughout the industry. By focusing first on storytelling, we think we're going to change the whole industry.
And it does feel like it's long overdue. And when you talk about that the folks who should be diverse, who are doing the writing and the directing, because look at where that's taking place in New York State and so much of it right there in New York City. You know, do you think that this is a turning point in the television industry as a result of this new law?
I think so. There's certainly been plenty of consciousness raising, plenty of political conversations. So the industry was ready, but now we'll actually have an economic plan in place. Yes, I think this is going to be a turning point. I think we're going to see that the industry will reflect the city, will reflect the state. The shows will reflect people's stories. I think the long-term health of the industry was at stake here. You can't continue to do things in a non-diverse way and expect audiences to still care, to expect taxpayers to still care. If you want to actually have a long-term future in the entertainment industry, you have to take action. And I think we've done that now. And I think this is going to benefit everybody. I know all of our members, I shouldn't say all, you put six writers together in a room, you get eight different opinions. But, you know, our members are strongly supportive of this because they recognize that their own employment, their own opportunities to grow their careers, their own opportunities for the industry to stay healthy are at stake here. And so this, although it's aimed at women and people of color, we think the entire industry and the people who work in the entire industry will all benefit from it.
Now, if I understand it correctly, before it actually kicks in, the money commitment part, that actual tax break, there first has to be a study. And what will this study look at? And what do you think that it will find?
Yeah, the study will be funded by the state. We hope it will be set up and completed this year. The goal is to identify the percentage of available writers and directors, people who could do this kind of work. You look at film schools and film festivals, you look at theater, you look at people who have experience directing shorts or writing shorts, short movies, and you say, okay, if we'll take a look at that universe of people, and you say there's 50% of them are female, say, and 30% of them are people of color. And then you compare that with the actual hiring patterns, where, in fact, at this point, they're much lower than that. You know, it's maybe 30% of TV writers are women, maybe 10% of TV writers are people of color. You know, it varies from year to year. So if you see that disparity, then you say, okay, the tax credit goes into effect. I mean, we know that this disparity exists. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows this disparity exists. People are concerned about it. So when that study proves what we all anticipate it will prove, then the tax credit kicks in. So presumably that will be first thing next year.
So you're saying, I think you said, there are enough women and people of color available to fill this void, but it's just a matter of whether they can break through or take advantage or get that opportunity, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, we have programs and events here at the Writers Guild of both our members and potential members, people who have done projects that are really interesting. Maybe they've created a whole webisode on their own, or maybe they've submitted scripts to our training program. And if you look around those rooms, they're a lot more diverse than if you look around the industry as a whole. There's an enormous amount of talent. In fact, a couple of years ago, we did an intensive study, a survey of our members, and we said, look, we all know there's a diversity problem. Do you think it's a lack of talent or a lack of opportunity? And overwhelmingly, our members said, no, there's plenty of talent. It's just a lack of opportunity.
Hmm. Well, that's what I was wondering then. So it's not really, well, it probably will generate more interest among a more diverse group of writers, right, to get into the field. But now it's going to be competitive then, which is good.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the city of New York has funded a mentorship program with the Writers Guild of America East for a few years now, and the goal is to get more diverse talent pool going, and we get hundreds of scripts submitted, and man, they're really good, and these are folks who really should have a crack at building careers in TV, and we help them polish their scripts. We give them one-on-one mentorship with experienced showrunners. We do skills training, but you know, these are folks who are ready to build careers. They are eager. They are there are many folks ready to do it. It's just a question of bringing them to the attention of the producers that do the hiring and making sure they have an opportunity to get through that door. Yeah, again, when you don't have a systematized way of hiring and recruiting people, you just tend to perpetuate the current situation. I don't know that I would say there's evil in the entertainment industry. We have to fight the evil. There's inertia in the industry. Mm-hmm. This will overcome that inertia, and people will be able to build careers.
And so you do feel like it's going to change storytelling. It's going to change what are the options that we have in selecting what we're going to watch.
Yeah, TV will get even better. It's pretty good right now, but it will be even more reflective of people's actual experience. If you're a New Yorker and you turn on the TV, it's going to reflect your life, mm-hmm. the folks you see on the subway, the folks you see picking apples upstate, more than it maybe does now. Again, the industry is committed to it. They just needed this actual commitment, this economic commitment.
Well, that's great. And then with all these different streaming services and the way, you know, our TV watching habits today, people, you know, binging on series, we're always looking for that new content, right? So this will definitely help, I would think, to fill that gap.
Oh, yeah. There'll be a lot of good stuff to watch, no matter what your interests. And another thing we hear from speaking with our members is it isn't necessarily one-to-one. You know, if you have three more black writers in a show, you'll get a better, you know, this or that. It's the depth of experience that you get from having more diverse writing staffs is really important for the quality for everyone. When there are multiple points of view, lots of different backgrounds, lots mm-hmm. of different experiences reflected, TV's just going to get better.
That was New York State AFL-CIO's Darcy Wells. The podcast is called Union Strong. That's what all we've got for you tonight. I want to thank our guest, the new DC-37 Executive Vice President, Raul Campbell, for joining us this evening. Till next time, ciao.